Hello, my name is Peter Verhash and you are listening to an audio tutorial which is the last part of a series of seven slideshows about the language Perl, programming language Perl. And this part of the tutorial finally talks about some of the very complex issues Perl references and objects, and it's a little bit object-oriented programming in Perl. Let's go on to the next slide. References. Well, actually, references, if you programmed in the language C, then they are pointers. If you did not program in the language C or some other language that used pointer and you are not actually familiar with this issue, then, well, I could say you are in trouble, but now I explain it a bit. Then references are variables that do not contain value in itself, but rather point to another variable that contains the value. For example, the variable apple contains the value 113. The variable pear contains a string called apple. The variable plum points to the variable apple. Now, if you print $$pear equals $$plum, then you can see that the output is 113 equals to 113, which is an evidence. But what has happened actually? Actually, it has happened that when $$pear was evaluated, then $$pear was first evaluated and it became the string apple. But before the string apple there was a dollar sign, and $apple is 113, therefore it printed out. This is called a soft reference because we are referencing a variable using its name. On the other hand, plum references the variable apple with a hard reference. So when $$pear is evaluated, actually a symbol table lookup happens and Perl searches for the variable named apple, wherever this variable is. When $plum is evaluated, on the other hand, $plum already points to the variable value, and $$plum gets immediately to the variable value apple without any symbol table lookup. The backslash before the variable named $apple means a reference. So in the assignment operator, $plum gets the reference of the variable apple. Let's go on to the next slide. Easy memory handling. In this example, we have a global variable which is called apple, and we have a local variable, which a my variable, because local is a keyword used in Perl for some different thing. So a my variable inside the sub point here to confuse you a little bit. The my variable gets the value 113, which is one less than the global variable apple, and the subroutine returns a reference to this variable. So again, if we put pear apple and assign plum to this reference, to this my variable inside the subroutine, then you will see that the output is now not evident and it's lying. 114 is not equal to 113, and the reason is that the local variable declared with the keyword my is not the same as the global variable, and therefore it's a difference having a soft reference to the variable apple and having a hard reference to a variable which is called apple in case there are more than one variables in different scopes having the same name. However, you can see that we did not allocate the variable declared with the keyword my, and usually such a variable is automatically, as in any language, local variables are released by the interpreter Perl. But Perl knows that the reference to this variable is returned by the subroutine, and it keeps track of variables being referenced by other variables, even if they are local, and therefore it does not release this variable. So you need not and you cannot release variable or memory directly, like in language C, for example, with malloc or free, and therefore it's a less burden on you, and you may not, or you can try hard, but I think you cannot reference any memory which was already released. Perl will take care and release the memory whenever you don't use it anymore. You need not tell Perl that you are not using it anymore. It will know. If all the variables gone away that point to a variable, then that memory is freed. Well, almost. Let's go on to the next slide. In this case, we reference the same variable again, but we put the reference to this variable into two different global variables, peer and plum, and we call the subroutine pointer two times. And after that, we increment the variable referenced by plum. And what happens? It happens that we actually get two variables. One is incremented, the other one is not incremented. Why did it happen? The reason is that the local variable apple is not kept alive by Perl, only the value and the space that holds the value. And when the function is called the second time, it created another instance of this variable. It is this my variable called apple, and the reference to this new variable is put into the global variable plum, and this is not the same as the variable referencing by peer. So plum, $plum and $peer are two different variables. Let's go on to the next slide. This is a complex reference variable example. You can see that $apple equals sub. What's this? Have you ever seen anything like that in any other language? Well, actually, a variable can not only reference another variable, but also can reference subroutines, or can reference an hash or a whole array. Apple, as a scalar variable, happen to reference an unnamed subroutine, and melon happens to reference another unnamed subroutine. And whenever you call the subroutine putting an and sign before $apple, you call the first unnamed subroutine, which returns a reference to an array, which happens to be called apple, but this name doesn't play any role whenever the subroutine returns. Only the place, the array, is kept, and peer points to this array. And plum happens to point to a hash, which inside the unnamed subroutine is called again apple, but that name is not kept again whenever the second unnamed subroutine referenced by melon is returned. So if we increment the second element of $peer, so the array referenced by peer, which happens to be 3, I think, and then decrement the same element, because you can see that this is a two different notation referencing an array. Or we do the same with the hash. Then we get actually 113 in this case. Well, in this case, well, the output is 113 equals 113, but in this case, we print out different digits. Let's detail a little bit more what happens in the increment and the decrement. $pair happens to reference an array. $pair is the array itself. Bracket to bracket close following $pair is an element, the second or the third element of the array, because arrays are usually indexed from the index value 0. But this is quite a confusing syntax. And the syntax notation on the next line, $pair minus greater than, which let's read arrow or point to, and index 2, is an abbreviation. Well, more readable form. It's not an abbreviation, it's even longer than the previous one. But this is an abbreviation of accessing an array element referenced by a variable in Perl, which is quite similar to the notation of accessing a field of a structure or a method or variable of a class in C or C++. So for people programming in C or C++, it's a quite readable form. The same is true for the hashes. If there is a curly brace opening and closing, of course, following the arrow, then on the left side, Perl expects a variable referencing a hash. Let's go on to the next slide. Array of arrays. You may remember that there is nothing like a multi-indexed array in Perl, and this is a shortage, but it's not, because there are references in Perl, and if there is an array and each element of the array is a reference to an array, then you actually end up having multidimensional arrays, which you can write reference to array of array and array of array, two variables. One is a reference, the other one, AOA, is an array itself with elements referencing array. But you can see that you can have a short notation between the closing and the next opening bracket. You can omit the arrow sign. It's more readable. Let's go on to the next slide, array of arrays, slide number 2. An array can have different elements. It need not be the same type for all elements. An array, the first element of the array contains, in this case, a reference to a hash. The second one, or again, a reference to a hash. And the third, indexed by 2, is a reference to an array. And therefore, you can mix up things as you like. And you can omit the arrow between closing and opening, either brackets or braces, or mixed up bracket and brace or brace and bracket. Let's go on to the next slide. In Perl, variables are stored in symbol tables. The default symbol table is main. Therefore, whenever you reference the variable foo, you actually reference the variable main colon colon foo, just implicitly. If there is no package notification before a variable, then the actual package is used and the default package is main. Each variable in the symbol table, each name, can have simultaneously, so at the same time, have a variable, a scalar variable, an array variable, a hash, a code, a subroutine, an IO handle, and a glob, which is the variable itself. And if ever you use the star notation before the name, then you actually have the hash pointed by the symbol table, and this hash is indexed by these capital letter words, scalar, array, hash, code, and IO, and glob, of course. Let's go on to the next slide, type glob. So you can see here an example. Foo once becomes an array of 6 elements, and at the same time a scalar value, and the same name references hash as well, containing 3 elements. Oh, and finally we have a subroutine named foo, which just returns 1. And we actually open the variable fo, and when I created this slide, I named this program to test PL, so it opened itself. Then if we print out the foo scalar, then you can see it prints out 120. For array, first element prints out 2. Actually, it's the second element indexed by the index value 1. For hash is the hash, as you can see, it's referenced. We can call the code. And if you store the IO value in a variable, and then you read that variable, then you just get the first line of this very file, and then you can print it out. And if you print the glob, then you will see it's star main foo itself. Let's go on to the next slide, the practical use of type glob. Usually type globs are not used in programs unless you want to make somebody confused when reading your text, but there is a practical use of the type glob. If you say star A equals star B, then it means that the array, the hash, and everything becomes the same in A as B. It can be used sometimes. I do not see personally much use of this. However, if you reference the scalar value 3.1415926 and so on with the type glob PI, in this case $PI becomes a value which contains the value PI. But if ever you want to assign a value to $PI, that causes a runtime error, and therefore you can be sure that this way PI is a constant value. Let's go on to the next slide. Modules. Well, modules can be written by somebody else and you use them, or you can write your own modules. To use a module is very easy. You have to read the manual of the module and then say use and the module name. And you need not care how it's written. There are many modules. CGI is many times used. It's written in Perl itself, but some modules are written in language C compiled, and the Perl module, which the Perl part of the module, which is put into the library directory, actually loads the external compiled module. So this way the language Perl is extended with binary modules, and you can just use it. Or you can write your own modules. Let's go on to the next slide. Writing your own module. Well, the module starts with package, keyword, and the name of the module. So in this case, we write a package named fruit. And it starts with this one and ends with the block in which it's enclosed, or it goes until the end of the file if you put the package into a separate file and load it with the keyword use. Actually, the subroutine inside the fruit worm assigns the value apple to the global variable apricot and returns the value carotene. But the package finishes with the curly brace, and when you assign apricot, when you assign the global variable a value calling the function worm inside, from inside the package fruit, then you actually assign the value carotene to the global variable apricot. And then we print out the global variable apricot from the module main, which is the default, but we need not write main colon colon apricot, and dollar fruit apricot, which is actually apple. So it prints out carotene slash apple and the new line character, of course. Let's go on to the next slide. Special subroutines in the module. Whenever you define a module, you can put some special subroutines in it, and they are so special that you need not even write sub before them. You just can write begin with all capitals, check, init, and end, and the subroutine body following these keywords, let's call them keywords, enclosed between braces. The subroutine begin is executed as soon as possible when the subroutine is loaded, and it's unloaded after it's executed. The check runs after compilation, but before the runtime starts. But in reverse order, if you have, you can have more than one begin or end, or check or int and end subroutines. Init runs after the compilation. Begin runs before the call compilation, as soon as it can run. So if it's compiled, it started immediately. And end subroutine is executed as late as possible before the module is finally unloaded, so when it finishes. To get into more detail, let's see an example. Let's go on to the next slide. Special subroutines example. Well, actually, the package main is the default, so the file test.pl that I used to have this content did not start with package main. When I typed on the command line perl space test.pl, what has happened? Perl read the file and started to compile it, and it saw a begin. And when it compiled it up to the point where the end subroutine started, it saw that it's a begin subroutine in the package main, so I have to execute it immediately, and it started and it printed one. Then it went on and saw that there is a subroutine end, but it need not execute it. Then it executed the subroutine begin and printed three. After that, it compiled until the end of the package, until the end of the file, and then started to execute the subroutines named check. If we had more such special subroutine, it executed them in reverse order, so it first printed out 8, and then it printed out 6. So we could make some checkings, and then it executed the init subroutines, which were named init, in forward order from start to the end, so it printed 5 and 7. And then it executed nothing because there was nothing inside the module except these special subroutines, and started to unload the subroutine, and it saw that still there is a subroutine named end in the package, and it called it, and it printed out 4 and 2, because ants are executed in reverse order. The last one is executed first. Let's go on to the next slide. As I've already mentioned, you can put a module into the separate file, and this slide is putting a module into a separate file. On the left side, you can see a package which is put into a separate module named module 1. There is a begin and end statement and subroutine and a subroutine called hello, which prints hello, I love you. Wow, so great. Finally, there is one and a semicolon. It's a statement in Perl, quite legal statement, an expression which results true. If you put a module into a separate file, you have to take care to have an expression resulting true at the end of the file. Otherwise, Perl thinks that the module was not loaded successfully, because this is a return value, just like in a subroutine, a package in a separate file has a return value, which is not stored anywhere in any Perl variable, but much rather used by Perl, so you can signal a module if a module was not unloaded successfully. The modules are searched in the directories which are listed in the array INC, which is an abbreviation for include. If you want to use a module which is in the actual directory, then you have to push dot as a string, which usually means either under Windows NT or in Unix, the current directory, and then say use module. And then in the example on the right side, calls the module, calls the function hello in the module. Let's go on to the next slide. Objects in Perl. Well, Perl language is not object-oriented by itself. It's a functional programming language. But if someone tries to explain you that Perl is an object-oriented language, then just do not start to argue with him or her, because there are object-oriented extensions to Perl, and you can program object-oriented in Perl. There is actually nothing like a class in Perl. An object is a reference which is blessed into a class. What does it mean? A reference, any reference, can be blessed into any package. So you have to have a package implementing a class, and if ever you reference something and you bless this variable referencing something with the command bless into this package, then this variable will become a kind of object. You will see later how practically it can be used. Bless is actually a command, and the first argument of this command should be the variable referencing something, or just a reference, and the second argument is the package. If the second argument is missing, then it blesses the reference into the actual package, the default package. And packages implementing objects or classes, actually classes, usually contain a subroutine called new, which need not name new, but it's better if you name it new, because it's the creator of an object which does what it has to do, but it usually returns a reference to a hash which is blessed into that very class, like in the example. Let's go on to the next slide. Creating a new object. If you have a class defined with a package, and the package is programmed in that way, then any function can create a new reference and bless it into that class and then return that reference. The creator should allocate memory. It's not automatically created like in other languages. At least you have to create it saying that there is a hash which we want to reference. It's not a big deal. You need not call malloc or anything. Just having a variable or even just saying bless, opening and close curly braces, which allocates automatically a hash inside Perl. And then you bless this reference into the actual package. Let's go on to the next slide. Class is a package. And if there is a subroutine in that that package, then it can be a method. And if a variable is blessed into a package, then the same way as you use array references, referencing array element with the arrow notation, you can use the arrow notation to call subroutines and let's say, well, call methods in that class using the array notation from the package that you blessed that reference into. If the subroutine is not implemented in that package, then Perl automatically looks at the global variable named ISA inside that package. So if it's a package, what was the name of the package before in the example? It was called myClass. Then at myClass colon colon ISA is looked for other package names and tries to find a subroutine with the given name in those packages. Wherever it finds it first, it's called automatically, and therefore it's a kind of inheritance that you can implement through this array. You can use methods different notations. One is the arrow notation I have already specified. If you say $object, which is a variable, arrow method name and arguments, then you call the subroutine called method from inside the package into which object variable was blessed into. The subroutine is called in this case a very special way because it gets the arguments which are listed in the arguments, but the very first argument is the value of the reference object itself. There is another way to call a method which says method, then the object, space, and the arguments, which you usually use in the print statement, or you may use it with new class and arguments, initialization arguments. But I recommend that you never use this, unless in print statements. Always use the arrow notation with parentheses. You have to use parentheses in that notation. It's more readable, and there is less error possibilities that you read something different than Perl thinks it is. Let's go on to the next slide. To clarify all the things that we were talking about, here is a class example. Here we have a base class which implements two functions, F0 and F1. When you call F0, it says that class variable is the reference variable and the arg is the argument. F1 does the same. It's very similar to the subroutine F0. You can see that the variable is called $class, the first argument, and therefore we imply at this point, which we will see later, that there are methods and they are called in a way like methods are called. Principally, there is no difference between subroutines and methods. Any subroutine in a package you can call in a method notation calling or as a subroutine. But you cannot distinguish when it's called, so you just take the arguments. The second package is called my class, and it wants to inherit functions from the class base class because you can see the global variable inside this package ISA will contain the base class. It's pushed into the array. There is a function called new in this one, which is the prototype of all new methods implemented in Perl. It does nothing but returns a reference to an empty hash blast into the actual package. And it implements the subroutine, or let's say the method F1, which is very similar to the subroutine of the same name from base class, but it prints my class instead of base class. And it implements F2, which is again very similar. And then it implements a function which is called autoload. Well, I will talk about that later. Then the main part of the main package starts, which says new my class that calls the subroutine new from the package my class, and that returns a blast reference to an empty hash, and it's put into the variable, global variable Q. And then we call F0, which is not implemented in my class, but implemented in base class. But because base class is inherited, it's actually not an error, it's executed, and it prints out base class F0 and the argument 1. Then we call F1 from the package reference from the package into which Q is blast into, with a different notation which I use only for demonstration purposes, and in real programs I advise you never use this notation because it's quite unreadable. F1 $Q and the arguments. And then it prints my class F1 because it's actually implemented in the class my class, so it's not inherited from the base class because it's re-implemented in my class. And it prints the first argument. The rest arguments are ignored. Then we call F2 from my class in a very special way, referencing my class by its package name. And then it prints out my class F2 1. And then we call F3. Oh wait, F3 is not implemented. There is nothing like F3. What happens? Well, if the function is not implemented and is not inherited from anywhere, then Perl actually calls the function autoload. If that's not implemented as well, then it's an error. And the global variable $autoload, and this global variable belongs to that very package, gets the name of the function. So it prints out autoload my class colon colon F3. And then we finish. And what happens? There is still a line printed at the bottom, which says autoload my class colon colon destroy. Who calls that? Why was autoload called again? The reason is that there is a method called destroy that you can implement, and this is called whenever a reference goes out of scope, is released. When an object is released, so it's not when, the same as end, when a package is unloaded. The package is not unloaded, may not be unloaded. In this case, it's unloaded, but don't care that. If we have an object, and this object goes out of scope, let's say that Q gets the value undef, for example, then the method destroy is called. And because there is no such method, autoload is called. Let's go on to the next slide. Method destroy. Let's talk about it a bit more detailed. So, if this function is defined, it is automatically called when the object is not used anymore. It's the part of the releasing of the memory occupied by the object. It gets only one argument, the object itself. So if you implement some object and class that has some external resources that it also has to release whenever the object is released by Perl, then you can implement that actions in the subroutine destroy. Let's call it the method destroy. The argument that you get is a reference, and it's a read-only argument. You should not alter it, actually. But if you happen to bless it into another class, or another package, let's say, then after destroy returns, Perl sees that it's blessed into a different class, and the destroy method for that class or that package is also executed. Let's go on to the next slide, which is the final slide of all the series of the tutorials, the thank you slide. We made a long way along learning Perl, and I hope that you've gained a lot of knowledge regarding Perl, lot of information, and by now you can program a little bit in Perl, and you can understand some details of the language, but much of the overall feeling of the language. And I hope that this tutorial helps you. Thank you very much for your attention, and happy programming. Goodbye.